कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्दा जय चैतन्य
The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on September 26, 1984 at Murari Sevak Farm in Mulberry, Tennessee. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 7, Verse 9.
Savai nivritti nirata
Sarvatro
pekshako
muni
Kasya va brihating eta Atmanam
asamabhyasat
Sri Sonaka said, Sri Sonaka asked Sutta Goswami, Sri Shukadev Goswami was already on the path of self-realization. And thus he was pleased with his own self. So why did he take the trouble to undergo the study of such a vast literature? Translation with repetition. Sri Saunaka asked Sutta Goswami.
Sri Saunaka asked Sutta Goswami.
Sri Sukadev Goswami was already
on the path of self-realization.
And thus he was pleased.
And thus he was pleased.
With his own self.
With his own self.
So why did he take the trouble?
To
undergo the study.
Of such a vast literature.
Purport. For the people in general, the highest perfection of life is to cease from material activities and be fixed on the path of self-realization. Those who take pleasure in sense enjoyment or those who are fixed in the material bodily welfare work are called karmis. Out of thousands and millions of such karmis, one may become an atma-rama, by self-realization. Atma means self and arama means to take pleasure. Everyone is searching after the highest pleasure, but the standard of pleasure of one may be different from the standard of another. Therefore, the standard of pleasure enjoyed by the karmis is different from that of the atmaramas. The atmaramas are completely indifferent to material enjoyment in every respect. Srila Shukadeva Goswami had already attained that stage, and still he was attracted to undergo the trouble of studying the great Bhagavatam literature. This means that Srimad Bhagavatam is a postgraduate study even for the Atmaramas, who have surpassed all the studies of Vedic knowledge. Thus, in the Bhaktivedanta purport of text 9, chapter 7, canto 1 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the matter of the son of Drona punished. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai!
So, here is the conclusive proof of how exalted is the study of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, by the Srimad Bhagavatam alone, one can achieve all perfection. The Srimad Bhagavatam is known as Amala Purana, is the spotless Purana, the Purana that is free of all material conceptions. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that those who are too attached to fruitive activities, their minds are bewildered by the words of the flowery Vedas. But here, we can understand that the Srimad Bhagavatam surpasses the Vedas, because the Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching one the Vritti Marg, or the path of renunciation, the path of becoming completely fixed up within God consciousness. Most scriptures teach one the Pravritti Marg, which is the path of material sense enjoyment. And they tell one how one can enjoy so that in the future there's a better chance for going back to Godhead. But here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, this especially explained that the real purpose of the Bhagavatam is not to perpetuate one's material enjoyment, but to fix one up on the transcendental platform so that one can return back to home, back to Godhead without any difficulty. So, this is very wonderful that the Srimad Bhagavatam is, at the one hand, such a rare book that even complete liberated souls, they study it to gain further insight into the Absolute Truth. And this highest of all Vedic literatures is now available to the Western people in their own languages, especially English, German, Spanish, Swedish, and so on, French, Italian. Because by this study, then the same perfection that was achieved by Sukadeva Goswami might also be achieved, or may also be achieved by the devotees who are studying the Srimad Bhagavatam today. We can understand that the standard of pleasure that one achieves by studying the Srimad Bhagavatam is many times or millions of times more, unlimited times more, than the happiness that one would achieve through any form of material activity. Because even the Gyanis, they have already rejected material happiness and they have become liberated. But here it clearly explains that even those liberated souls, they find further enlightenment and transcendental bliss by studying the Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the most elevated transcendental literature. When Lord Chaitanya was touring, when he was going on his travels, he came to a place which was known as Barahanagar, or the city named after Barahadev. And when he reached there, he found that there was this pandit who was giving lectures on the Bhagavatam. So Lord Chaitanya was naturally very pleased. But then he found that that pandit, that his Bhagavatam was a little bit old. At the same time, he liked the Bhagavatam class that the pundit was giving very much. So when that pundit asked for Lord Chaitanya for an order, how he should lead his spiritual life, what should be his specific practice of devotional service, then Lord Chaitanya ordered him that his practice should be that he should daily read the Srimad Bhagavatam. He should read the Srimad Bhagavatam. And actually he became known as Bhagavat Acharya. And his daily sadhana was that he would, 18, 20 hours, 24 hours a day, he'd simply be giving Bhagavatam class. It's a non-stop yajna that practically he would just continually give Bhagavatam class on a regular basis. That was his specific service assigned by Lord Chaitanya to him. And they claim that Lord Chaitanya gave him a few fresh pages from memory, that Lord Chaitanya had the entire Bhagavatam memorized, and when there was that he wrote some pages, and they claim that the original pages written by Lord Chaitanya are there. That's hard to ascertain. But there's a fact that this ashram of the Bhagavad Acharya is still there. That actually he was this one associate of Lord Chaitanya. That it was his specific service, was continually just to read the Bhagavatam. And by that, he became completely perfected. So this Bhagavatam is very, very important. Because there are so many religious books in the world. And religious books and scriptures, they contain transcendental words. But most of the instructions of the scriptures are not actually transcendental. The transcendental words are very few and far between, and they're mixed up within the other instructions. So that one is continually hearing compromises for how to enjoy in the material world, how to enjoy, and at the same time, how to do that in such a way that it's not offensive to God, very much. But actually how to develop love for God and how to realize the absolute truth, how to remain on the transcendental platform, how to return back to the kingdom of Godhead. This process, even a liberated soul is interested in knowing more and more about, plus the details about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the transcendental nature of his devotional service. This topic is nowhere discussed in as great a clarity and voluminous manner as in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam is accepted by all the Paramhamsas and great souls as the most authoritative literature on this science of God consciousness. The Vedas describe it as the ripened fruit of the Vedic tree. There's a saying in Bengali, if you want to know what tree that is, then by its fruit it is known. Just like on the side of the hill over there, there's some trees. You ask, what is that tree? They say it's an apple tree, because it produces the apple fruit. Or it's a peach tree, or it's a pear tree, or it's an oak, produces oak seeds or something. But generally a tree, mango tree, orange tree, they're all known by the fruit they produce. So similarly, they say that the ripened fruit of the Vedas is the Srimad Bhagavatam. If you want to know the actual purpose of the Vedas, then you study the Srimad Bhagavatam. The purpose of that particular tree, its actual, what is the value of it? If you take an apple tree and you study its bark, you study its roots, you study its leaves, but the real greatest value of that tree is the apple fruit. That is actually what it, that's why people plant it. Because that's the most valuable thing that it produces. So the Vedas, the most valuable thing that it produced is fruit. Its essence is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So if someone wants to know what is the entire purpose of the Bhagavata, of the Vedas, what is the real secret nomenclature of the Vedas, you don't have to read all the Upanishad, Purana, Mahabharata, simply by reading the Mahapuranam, the Srimad Bhagavatam, then all of the purports of the Vedas, all of the objectives of the Vedas are fulfilled simply by perfectly reading the Srimad Bhagavatam. When Lord Chaitanya was instructing Rupa Goswami, then he explained the different categories of animals and life and jiva, living entities, and then different categories of human beings. So first he said that amongst all the animals, of course, the human being is most important, but there are many tribal kind of uncivilized human beings, Sabors, Bodas, so on. And then more elevated than these type of uncivilized human beings, those engaged in meat eating and hunting and other kind of violent and uncultured activities without any reference to Vedic authority. Higher than them are the Veda Mukhe Mani, Dharma Nahi Gani. Those who give lip service, Mukhe Mani, they verbally say, yes, I'm a Hindu, I believe in the Vedas, or I'm a follower of the Vedas, or I'm a devotee, or something like that. They say by mouth. They give lip service, but they don't actually do it. Whatever the forbidden activities of the Vedas are, they don't take those very seriously. They neglect them, and they do them anyway. Then, higher than that are the Karmanishtas. Those who are following, you have the, what is it? That's the Madhya 8, I think. Maybe it's 7. I need the Strax Rupa Goswami. Here we go. Tarmadde manusha jati oti alpotor, tarmadde mlecha pulinda bodha sabor. Although living entities known as human beings are very small in quantity, that division may be still further subdivided. For there are many uncultured human beings like mlechas, pulindas, bodhas, and saboras. Then the next verse is Veda Nishta Madde Ardik Veda Mukhe Mane Veda Nishida Papa Kore Dharma Nahi Gane. Among human beings, those who are followers of the Vedic principles are considered civilized. Among these, almost half simply give lip service while committing all kinds of sinful activities against these principles. Such people do not care for the regulative principles. Prabhupada mentions in the purport that the highest type of religious system is described in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.26. Thus, Savai Pung Sang Paru Dharmo Yato Bhakti Dadhokshaji. The highest form of religion is that by which one becomes fully conscious of the existence of God, His form, name, qualities, pastimes, abode, and all pervasive features. When everything is completely known, that is the perfection of Vedic knowledge. The fulfillment of Vedic knowledge is systematic knowledge of the characteristics of God. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 15.15. Vedaischa sarvairahameva vedya. The aim of Vedic knowledge is to understand God. Those who are actually following Vedic knowledge and searching after God cannot commit sinful activities against the Supreme Lord's order. However, in this age of Kali, although men profess to belong to so many different kinds of religion, most of them commit sinful activities against the orders of the Vedic scriptures. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore says herein, Veda Nishida Papa Kori Dharma Nahi Gani. In this age, men may profess a religion, but they actually do not follow the principles. Instead, they commit all kinds of sin. Dharmachari Madhe Bahutha Karmonishta
Koti karmonishta madhyako gani shreshto.
So among the followers of Vedic knowledge, most are following the process of fruitive activity and distinguishing between good and bad work. Out of many such sincere fruitive actors, there may be one who is actually wise.
Koti gane madde hoi aka jana mukto. Koti mukto madde durlabh aka Krishna bhakto.
Out of many such wise men, one may actually become liberated, mukta. And out of many millions of such liberated persons, a pure devotee of Lord Krishna is very difficult to find. So, research is going on for the karmis, gyanis, and yogis, but until the search is complete, no one can attain peace. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita says, Gyatva mang santing richati. One can actually attain peace when he knows Krishna. This is described in the next verse. Krishna bhakta nishkam otoiv shanto bhukti mukti siddhi kami shakali oshanto. Because a devotee of Lord Krishna is desireless, he is peaceful. Fruitive workers desire material enjoyment. Gyanis desire liberation and yogis desire material opulence. Therefore, they are all lusty and cannot be peaceful. So here, the objective of all the processes of yoga, karma, jnana, the ultimate objective is to achieve Krishna consciousness. And that is achieved by studying the Srimad Bhagavatam. I don't know, it seems like I have something in my eye or something. The purpose of the Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, is different than other scriptures. When we try to explain to people what is the purpose of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's very difficult to use the reference of other scriptures because the Srimad Bhagavatam sails far over their objectives. The Srimad Bhagavatam's purpose is to actually leave the material world and go back to Godhead. For most of the other scriptures' purpose is how to live in the material world with the blessings of God. O God, our Father who art in heaven, give us this day our daily bread. The objective is normally not to return to God. Even I was once preaching to one person, and just the thought of seeing God, the person started to get real nervous and say that, I don't want to see, I'm not ready. What would I do if God suddenly, you know, he got all just like completely hysterical, you know, just the thought that suddenly, what if, you know, there came God, you know, it was like completely flustered with even the idea. People, they're so far from God consciousness that it's very pitiful that here as a human being, they have the opportunity to achieve this highest consciousness. And that is made even more easily attainable by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But they're completely neglectful of this, the summa bonum of life, the prime purpose of life. So studying the Bhagavatam is so important. When the son of Chaitanya Das, Srinivas, he became about 16 years old or so, he immediately knew that the whole purpose of life was to study the Srimad Bhagavatam under a bona fide spiritual master. By this, the supreme goal of life could be achieved. So he wanted to study the Srimad Bhagavatam under a pure devotee. So he decided he would go to Jagannath Puri to find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that he would ask Chaitanya Mahaprabhu either to assign someone to teach him. So then his journey, how he, you know, walked through the jungles, walked all the way to Jagannath Puri, and finally, when he reached there, Lord Chaitanya was, see, big crowds of people, everything were there. He said, "What's happening? It's a big festival." He said, "Yes, the festival. Lord Chaitanya entered into the temple. He didn't come out. It was a festival of his disappearance, of his going back to the spiritual world." He said, "No, no! No, how will I study the Bhagavatam?" And he was just beating his head. He said, "How will I know the Bhagavatam? Lord Chaitanya is gone. I might as well take my life." And he was contemplating committing suicide, and then he just like fell unconscious and fainted. So then in his dream, Lord Chaitanya came and said that Advaita and Nityananda Prabhu are still on the earth. They're in Navadvipa. You go there, by their mercy you'll be able to study the Bhagavatam. So don't take your life. Oh no, he told them actually to go to Gadadhar Prabhu, I'm sorry. He would teach him the Bhagavata. He would, by his mercy, could learn the Bhagavata. So then, and he couldn't take his life. So then he went to see Gadadhar Prabhu. So when he went to see Gadadhar Prabhu, just to make a long story a little bit condensed, then Gadadhar Prabhu was in complete separation of Lord Chaitanya. He couldn't speak to anyone. He wouldn't see anyone. He was just always crying and chanting and reading. He just couldn't focus his attention in any other way. But when he saw Srinivas, he became very happy because he knew that Srinivas was actually sent by Lord Chaitanya, so he could feel the presence of Lord Chaitanya and Srinivas' coming, and that relieved his separation. And Srinivas fell at his feet and paid his obeisance and begged for his mercy. They wanted to learn the Srimad Bhagavatam from him. Lord Chaitanya appeared to him in a dream and everything, in a vision. So then he said that, "Well, I'd be glad to teach you. But my Bhagavatam, by reading it, because it's all handwritten, and then meditating on the transcendental qualities of Krishna's pastimes, we can't help, we cried, and our Bhagavatam became washed out." They looked in the whole Bhagavatam, the pages were completely merged. So he said, "You have to get a new Bhagavatam, otherwise how can I teach you?" So that day, in those days, you didn't go to the local bookstore and buy a Bhagavatam. You had to go and hire a Brahmana, and for months he'd sit there and write the 18,000 verses of the Bhagavatam. And if you want purports, then so Srinivas went back to Navadvip, got a Brahman, or some Brahmins, to start writing the Bhagavatam. Then, after they completed writing the Bhagavatam, took his big package of Bhagavatam on palm leaves, walked all the way back to Jagannath Puri, went to the Tota Gopinath temple where Gadadhar was, saw that there was a festival going on. He said, "What's the festival?" He says, "Gadadhar Prabhu disappeared." And of course, it was a crushing experience for Srinivas. Again, he practically went mad. Somehow, Gadadhar Prabhu appeared in his... He fainted, and Gadadhar appeared and said, "Don't worry, you go back to Navadvip, find out Advaita Nityananda. Make me, they'll help you." So then again, he went back to Navadvip. He was already there, and he couldn't... When he got back, then again he found it, Advaita and Nityananda. In the meantime, within that period, when he was there, they were there, but in that period, they disappeared. Because after Lord Chaitanya, then one by one, all the associates, there was such separation. They just wound up their activities and they went back to the spiritual world. No one wanted to remain in this God-forsaken world. God had forsaken the world. He had left the world. So, for those personal associates, they who were so intimately connected with God, with Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they wanted to just rejoin him. So then again, he was completely destroyed. Somehow, he got the order to go to Vrindavan to find Rupa and Sanatan from Lord Nityananda and Lord Advaita. So then he headed off towards Vrindavan, just a long walk with his Bhagavatam. So finally he reached Vrindavan. He was very, very happy to reach Vrindavan. He decided to take a bath in the Akura Kunda, where Lord Krishna had it just at the outskirts. As he was taking his bath, he overheard two brahmanas talking and how Vrindavan just wasn't the same since the disappearance of Rupa and Sanatan. "What? What?" He's jumped out, you know. "What did you say? Rupa and Sanatan, where are they?" "What do you mean? Just, they've gone back to the spiritual world. Even now the festivities and kirtans from their recent disappearance are still going on at the Govindaji temple." Then he ran all the way to the Govindaji temple, and there he learned that yes, Rupa and Sanatan had disappeared. And then he just went like completely into coma. In the back of the temple, he just was unconscious. When he woke up, or rather he didn't wake up, but what happened was Jiva Goswami had received a dream where Rupa and Sanatan said that one great devotee, Srinivas, is coming. You take him and you teach him the Bhagavatam, and you have him take initiation from Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And so Jiva Goswami, he went to the temple and he found Rupa Goswami, Gauranga, just, you know, this person like in complete unconscious state, just chanting the names of Krishna. And in the back of the temple, tears pouring from his eyes. So then they thought, well, he thought this must be the person. So he picked him up and brought him over to his little hut, whatever, his little ashram. And then when he awoke, he said that, "Are you Srinivas?" I said, "Yes." He says, "I am Jiva Goswami." Then explained that Rupa and Sanatan have ordered me to do this. So in this way, finally Srinivas Acharya was able to find a spiritual master, able to find someone to teach him the Bhagavatam. I mean, he walked literally thousands and thousands and thousands of miles through unlimited ordeal. Just, he wanted to study the Bhagavata. With this type of determination, we should actually vigorously, full attention, be studying the Bhagavatam regularly, trying to understand what is the actual essence, what's the purport of the Srimad Bhagavatam. You see, as especially we're so fortunate that Srila Prabhupada has written the purport, we don't have to carry around palm leaves. It's been put into this printed form, very convenient to carry. You can get it in one volume, you can get it in 60 volumes, you can get it on microfilm, you can get it even on tape. So in this way, we're very fortunate that we have the Srimad Bhagavatam. And we should regularly study the Srimad Bhagavatam with that type of eagerness, as was exhibited by Srinivas, who was later given the title Acharya by the Goswamis, so he became a Srinivas Acharya. It was Srinivas Acharya, after reading the Bhagavatam, then he was ordered to distribute the Bhagavatam. So this is also the purport, that we should understand that by reading the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, these transcendental literatures, then it's our duty to also give them to others, to preach this message to others. Not simply we read and become liberated and then it ends there. But we should continue on. It's like a transcendental chain letter. Right? If each person that gets the science of Bhagavatam in turn teaches at least one other, but say if they teach 10 others, 100 others, then in this way the Krishna conscious movement can expand manyfold. And that is the only way of even trying to repay, although we can never fully repay, that is the only way of showing our desire for repaying the debt, is to be Krishna conscious and try to make others Krishna conscious. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Is there a question? Through preaching is not a stereotype. So many types of preaching. Festivals is one aspect of preaching, which is brings it to the public in a very visible way, involves them in a very wonderful way. So festivals is something which is very important. Book distribution, home preaching, farm preaching. Yena tena prakarena Krishna manani vosate. By any means, we're to bring a person to the point of accepting Krishna. Then after that, we introduce the rules and regulations. So initiation means at that time they accept to follow certain rules and regulations and chant Hare Krishna regularly. Yes, if they're trained by Brahmanas, then they can learn how to do those things. nucleus is always the preachers. If they're trained by preachers how to do those things, then they can start doing them in their home. Grihe tako bone tako sadahadi bole dako. Whether one lives in the ashram or whether one lives in the house, everyone should chant Hare Krishna. Of course, even in India now, we find that it's very hard to have a peaceful Krishna conscious life outside the ashram. Of course, it's even hard in the ashram, what to speak of outside. But in some cases. But we felt like, for instance, one family in India, he became Krishna conscious. So because he was a born Brahmana, he had a temple. When he took initiation, then the other caste Brahman said, you took initiation from a mlecha. Therefore now you're no longer a Brahmana. They tried to ostracize him. Because they were smarta Brahmanas, they weren't Vaishnava. So they tried to say that because the Guru was not a born Brahmana, therefore somehow there was something defective in that initiation. But through preaching, he showed these so-called born Brahmanas, they were doing nothing. They were not vegetarian, neither did they do puja, neither, but by birthright they were claiming, they were accusing the others, foreign-born Vaishnavas, but who are following everything very strictly, who are initiated into the Vaishnava Sampradaya, they were trying to bring in caste consciousness with them. So there was a big war, threats, attempts to beat up, and so many different things. They kidnapped one of the Namhat preachers and kept him locked up in the house for a while. But then finally, we went there, we did a big festival. Had 20,000 people come. And then all the people came up and pledged to chant. And it was so overwhelming in effect that this Brahman is, you know, the caste conscious Brahman, even like the smaller, just like disappeared, you know. Today, many of them are coming to that program and have like surrendered. And the really bitter ones, they're just like, how do you call that? They're just in the distance, eating their bitter pie. So, but that person had to endure. So he was kept telling me he wanted to come and live in the ashram. But in his particular situation, he already had a temple, he had deities, he had... I saw that it would be very it would actually be almost detrimental in his specific case to immediately come. He had a big family. We're not really set up for these big families yet. So it's not always so good in some temples, you know. We have to mature how to provide and engage big families. Prabhupada wanted us to develop that type of farm project where we can actually accept whole families and engage them, give them a proper varnashram, categorized engagement so that they can be completely fulfilled. But that person endured so much trouble. I remember once Prabhupada said in Mayapur when he told the people that you just come and stay here. We're providing you this facility so you can peacefully practice your Krishna consciousness. And even in India, if a person, for instance, we had, before we had our own Gurukul, we had grihasas and they sent their kids to the school at the Bhakti Vinod Institute, which was established by Bhakti Vinod Thakur, or in his name by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Originally, only the sannyasis and brahmacharis would preach and teach in that school. But after the demise of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the Gaudiya Math, they gradually reduced their preaching spirit. And they put hired teachers in there, and finally they took the government aid, and then now it's become like a public school, but you know, private school funded by government. So it's like a public school, practically speaking. The teacher made fun of the student that why he was doing all these things, and made some wisecrack, you know, completely atheistic wisecrack in the Bhaktivedanta Vinod Institute against this whole Vaishnavism and even against existence of God. He's like a complete atheist. And then the students came and started pulling the kid Sika in the middle of the class. He had to run back to the temple crying, you know. This was the Bhaktivinoda Institute, what to speak of other schools. So, even in India, if you, you know, you can be a Hindu, but you can't be a Vaishnava as easily as it is to be a Hindu. You wear your Sika in some places, you wear big tilak, you wear neck beads. I have girls who have disciples, and they go to school with their neck beads. The other girls chide them. So you become a sadhu, you become a sannyasini, you know. Because they're standing out, they're making a, you know, the others see that, alright, they're making a drive for becoming liberated, and then, you know, and they're forced to either preach and defeat them, or otherwise they're just, you know, made the mark of. So it's very difficult, even in India, what to speak of in the West. That's what's so surprising, that, of course, when you have programs, the more mature people, the older people, they're still religious-minded. But then if their son be or daughter becomes a devotee, they, you see all hell break loose. In Bangalore I went, the son was becoming a devotee. He was always initiated for 3 years. They said, let him get his Bachelor of Science. He got his Bachelor of Science, and then they put him in for Master of Science. And the boy was so attached to his parents that... He did it. He came to me once, and I just asked him, what are you studying? And he was studying some kind of computer communication, not programming, but some other really abstract use, and I said, how are you going to utilize that in Krishna consciousness? Because I never thought about that, you know. He thought about it, and it was like, practically, he said, after I graduate, I'll be a devotee. So then, you know, at least you study something. And I live in a temple. And you study something you can use. How are you going to use that? I mean, I don't mind in one sense, but it's a big investment of time and energy. But how are you going to use that? And then he meditated on it and he couldn't find any use for it. But it was just because his parents were pushing him that he had to get his master's degree. So then he left and became a devotee in one of the temples. And then his parents came crying. He said, our son, he was the valedictorian, number one in the class, he should get his master's degree. Then I said, how will he use his master's degree to serve God? You said he can also join after he gets his degree. How will he use that particular... We don't know all these things, that's for you to say, you're the guru, but we just know that our son should get his master's degree. That we are parents, it's our duty in life. If our son gets a master's degree, then our life is perfect. And this is their conditioning. And they didn't think that if their son gets back to Godhead, that's the perfection. But you know, the society, if their son gets a degree, then our son is a degree holder, then everything is good. They're so conditioned now by the social pressure, even in India, that they just think if my son has a good job, or if he has a degree, then everything's all right. It may be a bum, right? He may be lowest character, maybe, you know. But if he has a good degree, good, then everything is alright. So, somehow, they've agreed, finally, through some reverse psychology, to let their son be a devotee. But it's very, very difficult. So, what to speak of in the West, you find here a person wants to be devotee, they live outside. Unless they get association with the devotees, everyone is telling them, come and see the football game, let's go have a drink, have a joint, have a this, have a that. So many mayas are there. So it's very difficult here. Here the mayas are more gross. There it's all family affection, get a degree, your mother crying and rolling on the ground and having fits if you... Mother serious, come back immediately. If they made it, your mother's dying, you have to go, you know. And literally, one time Prabhupada, he told us that I don't even want to take any Bengali devotees anymore. He got so disgusted, you know. The one mother came and was rolling right on his floor in his room, was rolling back and forth, screaming, oh, crying, rolling. Going through, you know, all the ecstatic symptoms in reverse, you know. And the boy was there, you know, and the Prabhupada said, listen, he's free to go. Do you want to go? He said, I don't want to go. What can I do? He doesn't want to go. I can't force him. In fact, one boy was pressed so much by his parents because he was a devotee. He was pressed so much to leave the temple and come back. And when he left, he was so miserable that he committed suicide. You know, being just, you know, because they're very affectionate, the parents, they're very loving. But instead of, they could, with a little push, their boy could go back to Godhead because they have some attachment for parents. It's natural because parents actually treat their kids nice. That's why I feel that when parents, if they give love and affection to their children, Krishna consciousness, and they have some, even just for the parental affection, just for the love of their parents, that they can make so much advancement in Krishna consciousness. But instead, the parents, you know, due to their own materialistic sentiments, they want the best thing for their son, but they just don't understand that Krishna consciousness is the best thing. They think they get a degree, get a job, have a family, have a house, this is the best thing. They're like Daksha, Prajapati, they're in the Karmakanda. They don't understand the Vritti Marga. They haven't understood the Bhagavatam philosophy. So even though they're pious people, even though they respect sadhus, but when their son enters the Nivritti Marg, all hell breaks loose. Don't even talk about what happens if a daughter wants to enter Nivritti Marg. That, practically speaking, Prabhupada said, don't stand in between a father and his daughter. We don't even let daughters join the ashram unless their father gives a letter of consent. And basically, we don't even encourage it. But sons, you know, if they're over 18, then we take the risk. But so, one boy just recently, his mother and father took him to court in India. It was like, we didn't believe it. They took him to court, said he was mentally insane. They tried to do like a They had 150 boys from the neighborhood go to the courthouse, so waiting for him to come out to kidnap him and drag him back. He had to go to court, and he had wrote an affidavit out that I am in good consciousness. I am on my free will. I'm 23 years old. I got my Bachelor of Commerce. I've decided I want to be a devotee. I'm a major. I don't want to work, you know, as a slave or whatever. He just wrote his whole thing out, gave it to the judge. The judge said, can't be very insane to write all this. Seems to be. So he gave the order, well, he's over 21, the law is that he's free to do what he wants. But then just, you know, this whole mob, you know, that just, you know, he said, but of course, boy, you know, it's your mother, you should, you know. Even the judge, you know, but he was writing the order, you're free to, you know, because that was the law. But even he was like giving moral pressure. And the boy said, listen, I'm not leaving the courtroom unless I get escorted by a police van, you know, taken out of here, but I can't leave because they're going to kidnap me. They like took asylum of the court. Finally, they had to give him a police jeep and take him to the guard in Navadweep, and then he got across over to Mayapur. This is in, you know, in the Dham. So, you know, it's difficult, and for people to be Krishna conscious is difficult. So in our ashrams and our temples, actually, we're trying to do this congregational preaching. But and if a person really gets serious, there's some people that they'll be in a certain situation where it's very, very hard for them to actually be Krishna conscious outside, just because the total environment is so rotten. So that's why the farm projects are there to provide a very peaceful, nice place where people can use all of their energies and be Krishna conscious in a nice environment of Krishna conscious association. But of course, if we're also trying to do this by making many people chant Hare Krishna and then combining them together as little groups, then they provide a type of association. And Namhata is making congregations where there's no temple. You see, where there's a temple, you have your congregation. And where there's no temple, then you have many people chanting. You group them together and form them as a congregation, and they have like a preacher goes there and create the atmosphere of temple, regular meetings. But that's something that's just now being instituted in the West. It's something we had to do in India, otherwise even their people, without association, it was very difficult. Everyone likes, and people can identify with that very much easier in India. There's not too much opposition, except by communists, atheists, and other sampradayas. There's a lot of bogus yogis who claim to be avatars, and they give opposition. But, and these smarter brahmanas who say, well, it's very complicated. In India, you have many varieties of oppositions. In the West, it's mainly just Maya. Just kind of gross Maya. Just not so much complicated opposition. Maybe in the South, you have the Baptist Christian opposition, and you have just the gross sense gratification opposition. In South America, the Catholics, they don't really oppose much. They're very receptive. Then you just have Maya. So that's why it's a very nice preaching field. So these temples, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, they form the nucleus. They're the place from where the preachers are trained, where they're sent out, where people can come and get purified. They can see the Nityagaur deity. The Lord himself is there by having darshan, by coming and seeing how he's worshipped. They get purified. They can learn how to do this in their home. Or if it's too difficult, they can come and take shelter here and chant and Hare Krishna and be happy. And they can then practice the Nivritti Marga, be very happy, go back to home, back to Godhead. Is that all right? Hare Krishna.